We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Like it. Switching up the music a little bit here. Nice intro. Good job, guys. Chris, Mike, we're going to have fun tonight. I am Hub Arkish, and I am sitting in for Lawrence Holmes. Lawrence has the evening off, and so I'm going to be with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Been looking forward to this the last few days. I know you guys, if you're regular scoreheads, have been listening for a while, and I haven't had a voice for about 5 or 6 weeks, but it seems to be coming back. It's not all the way here, but we should have plenty for tonight to get you through 4 hours of the best sports talk in town. Our phone number, 312-644-6767. If you want to join the conversation, that is my favorite part of getting to visit with y'all, is talking to you. So please give us a call. Again, 312-644-6767. You can also text us at 67011 if you'd rather just get a thought or two on the air and not have to discuss it. We've got a special lineup for you tonight. We are going to check in just about 15, 20 minutes with Mike Petraglia, who covers the New England Patriots for CLNS Media. Mike visited with us a few weeks back prior to the Patriots game here in Chicago, does a great job on them. We'll get you an update on the AFC side of the Super Bowl matchup. Pat Manley is going to check in about 6:40. We're going to have Eric Edholm, who works for Pro Football Weekly, with me. He is down in Mobile, Alabama, and we'll get Eric on from Mobile. They haven't really started yet, but we'll set that up for you as the college draft scouting season begins in earnest. At 8 o'clock, Joe Curley, he covers the Rams for the Ventura County Star, is going to stop by. We'll talk a little bit about the NFC, the Rams side of things, getting ready for this Super Bowl. And at 9 o'clock, my buddy Gonzo, Mark Gonzalez, best baseball writer in town, along with Bruce Levine, of course. But Gonzo covers the Cubbies for the Chicago Tribune. Cubs had their convention this weekend. We will get caught up on all that happened there. Any stories that might have come out of that, where the Cubs are headed next. Been pretty quiet so far this offseason, but we'll get up, caught up with Gonzo as to what might be going on in the next couple of weeks. Believe it or not, we'll be talking about pitchers and catchers in, what, 3 weeks, guys? 4 weeks? It's right around the corner. I don't know how it comes so quickly. But, again, the phone number, 312-644-6767. Happy to talk about whatever is on your mind in the world of sports, the world of Chicago sports, of course. It was a great day yesterday. And, by the way, before I go any further, if you've been with us the last 10, 15 minutes, was having some fun in transition just now with Mac and Danny Parkins, and I was half kidding and half serious about the announcement that Mitch Trubisky is going to the Pro Bowl. Let's not belittle this. I mean, he was voted not only by fans, but by coaches and players around the league, the second alternate to the Pro Bowl. In essence, that made him one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFC, according to the vote of his fellow coaches and players, and that is a tremendous accomplishment. And I don't mean to belittle that in any way. It really speaks volumes about how far this kid came in one season. And particularly when you realize that he only started 13 games in college at North Carolina. So it is an accomplishment, and couldn't be happier for him. And it's something he should be very proud of. Now, that said, you have to be careful not to get too carried away with it, because the reality is we tend to use the Pro Bowl as kind of a marker as to, you know, where guys are. Are they stars in the league? Are they blue chippers? Are they red chippers? And to my way of thinking, the real Pro Bowlers are the guys who get picked to the initial team. It's nice to get to go when somebody else isn't. Remember, Russ Wilson already stepped in for Aaron Rodgers. Now you've got Mitch Trubisky stepping in for Jared Goff, who will be in the Super Bowl. And yet, actually, if you look at that, it's kind of interesting, because I would say down the stretch that Mitch Trubisky was probably playing as well as Jared Goff. Jared Goff, you know, had a really good second season, third season, I should say, in the NFL. He did not finish as strong or play as well as he did last year. Got off to a great start, but the Rams kind of got out of sync there, really, when they came to Chicago. And if you look at the last five, 6 weeks of the season, if Jared Goff is a Pro Bowler, you can make the argument that, that Mitch Trubisky is too. So, you know, good for him. I think it'll be a great experience for him, assuming he goes. You know, I think he will. I haven't heard anything to indicate that he's not going to. And it's good for the team and very happy for him. Again, I just don't want to get too carried away with the people who get on the other side and say, oh, you know, Bears have got a Pro Bowl quarterback now and we're all set. And, you know, there's no reason for him ever to lose another game. Mitch has still got some work to do. He knows that, but this is a nice honor for him. So let's get a call or two in before we start bringing in our guests. We will start out in Palatine. Soul Train is on the line. How you doing, Soul Train? Hello? Are you still there? Oh, looks like you're gone. Okay, so let's see if now I got it on line two. Let's try that again. Soul Train on line two. Have we got it right here?
Hey, Tom, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Listen, I'm glad I'm talking to you. First time I've ever called a score and spoken to you, but I there were some things in the game that went on yesterday with the coaching decisions that I think are getting a little bit overlooked. I'll start with the Patriots game. Before halftime, when the Patriots had the ball, third and four, minute something on the clock, Andy Reid decides to call a timeout. And I understand why he did it, but I don't think it was the right move. If you, the way the Chiefs played in the first half, I would be ecstatic if I was down 7-0. And I don't think the Patriots were going to call a timeout either. It didn't seem like they were, at least. Now you bring the ball. If it was third and 10, I understand it. Third and four, I don't want to give Tom Brady any more time than he needs. That, to me, was a that was something that might have been able to change the game. In the Saints game, on that last drive, irregardless of the referee's decision to not throw the flag, it still amazes me. On first down, he throws a three-yard pass to Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. You can't just run the ball and force the Rams to use their timeouts. Give them the ball, whether it's a field goal, whatever you get out of that situation. They get the ball with a minute left in the dome, no timeouts. It amazes me that some of, in my opinion, I think some of these coaches try to outsmart themselves. I can even go to Nagy. I haven't called. I've been still trying to get over the Bears' loss. But to give the ball to a Mizell and a Cunningham in a playoff game, I can't understand how they try to put these plays in there to try. I don't like Belichick, but I love the way he coaches. This guy is no nonsense. He doesn't do anything tricky. He comes up with a game plan that he thinks will work. But I don't know. You got to help me. I'll help you understand why these coaches are making some of these decisions.
Well, I think it's pretty simple, is that they outsmart themselves sometimes. They're trying so hard to be Belichick that they don't realize that that's not how he does it. He is consistent. He has things that he believes in, things he doesn't believe in. Some of them go against the grain, but he's earned the right to make those calls, and more of them work out than don't. I completely agree with you on both of your instances. Now, I will tell you, at the end of the first half, the Pats were going to use their timeouts, but I thought Tony Romo explained it really well. Teams that run that two-minute drill really well usually don't use their timeouts until they get inside of a minute. They're not in a hurry, no matter where they are on the field. And in that case, they had at least two. They might have had three. So that's plenty once you're inside of a minute, even if you're still in your own end of the field. And Reed just helped them by giving them that extra timeout. I don't think that was the difference in the game, because I do think the Patriots were going to score anyway. They knew how to run it, but I didn't agree with the call. The one that may very well have been the difference in the game is that why Peyton throws that pass, it makes no sense. I've got to go back and check, but I don't think the Rams had all three timeouts. I think they might have had two.
And they only had two.
Yeah, they had two. And so if he runs the ball on first down, he can take that thing down to about 20 seconds at least. Maybe even take – let's think about it. He's got a minute 41 on the clock, and so they call timeout after first down. You still run off 80 seconds after that. He could have run the thing out for the most part. It was his fault that ended that way. It was a terrible call by the officials, and it gets even worse than that. You know, I know this isn't what you're talking about, but then you want to win the game? Don't let the Rams go down and tie it. Okay, the Rams are a really good football team. That's going to happen. But then you get the ball in overtime and you throw an interception in your own end of the field. That's not the official's fault. So, you know, it was a terrible call, but people got to stop pretending that that's the reason that game turned out that way. That is not. We were talking about this in transition with Danny and Mac a few minutes ago. You go back to the Patriots and the Chiefs game, the non-pick call on the last Chiefs touchdown in regulation was every bit as bad and egregious as the non-interference call.
Yes.
But what did Belichick do? He threw his iPad. He swore a few times. Then he got back to work and won the game. You know, and so
you know how about in the game. You know, I want to commend some of the refereeing too. I love it when they allow them to play the game. I love the hand fight. You know, we've all played football, whether one level or another. You got to be able to be somewhat physical.
Well,
so I actually like the way they called. They made some mistakes.
I agree with you, but here's the thing:
roughing the passer, some of that. This one was egregious. I mean, this one allowed for a touchdown to be scored. I get it. But overall, I didn't think they did a bad job. I don't like it when they over-referee. Let these guys play. They're physical. They're big boys. It's different than the regular season. I really can't blame them. I thought they did a nice job, big plays.
Yeah, I tell you what, I think you're right about I think you're right about letting them play a little bit, but you got to be consistent. And the problem, you go back and look at more in the Patriots, the Chiefs game, there's a play earlier in the fourth quarter where Eric Berry, who is one of the best safeties ever to play the game, is holding and interfering with Rob Gronkowski 25 yards down the field. From the time they leave the line of scrimmage, he's got a hold of him. He's pulling on him. He's tugging on him. As the ball gets there, he shoves him. No flag. Then they come back on the next possession and they call one on PJ Jackson that is clearly just a little bit of hand fighting. So, I mean, I agree with you as far as letting them play a little bit, but you got to be consistent. You got to call it the same way both times. And they weren't as consistent as they needed to be. And as far as the roughing, I can't fault the officials for that. That's on the rules makers. They've made it impossible. And you know, they're calling the rule the way they're told to. It's just they've made it a really unfortunate rule. Let's get out to Andersonville and see what Pete has on his mind. Pete, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
Big fan of yours as well. So I've been listening to, you know, a bunch of sports radio, and lots of the conversations have been around the Patriots dynasty. And I wanted to just get your thoughts on the following question or comment. Would you say that, you know, the success of the Patriots is in part also due to just the, you know, the crappy division that they're in, and with the Oilers and the Jets, none of those guys have ever been able to give those guys competition. So they easily get to win their division, and then, you know, if everything plays out, they get to skip the wild card game, and then it's just one game to the championship. I mean, for the longest time, yeah, everyone's always picked the Green Bay. Why? Because no one in our division, the North, could ever give them any trouble. So, I mean, it's not necessarily taken away from what Brady and Belichick do. I mean, they win those games that they against bad teams. But I can't also help but think, but that's also helped facilitate it.
You know, Pete,
so I
think,
your thought on
that. I mean, to a degree, the division has been weak. But one of the reasons is because they all have to play the Patriots twice a year. The Jets did go to back-to-back AFC title games. I want to say it was in 11 and 12 because I know – I did the broadcasts on those games, lost one of them in New England, actually, I think. But you got to remember, they only play six games in the division. There's the other 10. So I would agree that the weakness of the division probably helps them a little bit, but it certainly doesn't explain 9 Super Bowls for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in the last 19 seasons. Or not 19 seasons, I'm sorry, in the last 18 seasons. They're better than anybody else. And certainly being in that division doesn't hurt them, and it probably even helps a little bit, but it certainly isn't the reason that they've been as good as they have. I got one more before we have to take a break because we've got a guest coming on, but let's see what George is thinking up in Racine. George, how you doing?
Yes, thank you very much, Hub. I'd like to ask a question. I would like to see them relieve Chris Tabor, special teams coordinator, especially against the New England Patriots in Chicago, where they gave up a touchdown and a punt return. And also, he's not working with the kickers at all. I just think he should be really. Do you agree with me?
I don't, George. I understand where you're coming from, and this is going to be, you know, mostly just kind of personal opinion and observation. Chris Tabor's a good football coach. He actually has his punt returner is in the Pro Bowl and was first-team All-Pro. And, you know, if we're going to blame him for what they're not doing with some of the coverage guys and the place kicker. You got to credit him for what his punt returner is doing. Pat O'Donnell actually probably had his best year punting too. He wasn't super, but he wasn't horrible. And I happen to know that Chris is a really good football coach. After 1 year, to say that he's the problem, I just don't see it. He is a Dave Tobe disciple, and Dave is the best special teams coach in football. I think Chris is going to do a real good job with them, and I think you got to give him something to work with. I think it was the Parkey signing that was the mistake, not the coaching. So, John, Ryan, I'd love to talk to you guys, but we've got guests coming up in the next two segments. So you're welcome to hold on. If you want to give me a call back in about half an hour, we're here till 10 o'clock. I do have to run right now, though. We're going to take a very quick break. And on the other side, going to welcome in Mike Petraglia. We'll see what he has to say about the New England Patriots. He's a lot closer to who I am. That's what's coming up next here at The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Brady under center turns, gives to Burkhead, hole on the left side. He's in. Burkhead is in for the touchdown. And with an overtime touchdown run by Rex Burkhead, the dynasty continues for the New England Patriots. They're going to their third straight Super Bowl. 37-31, New England knocks off Kansas City on their way to Super Bowl 53.
That was deja vu all over again. Kind of sounded like the way Super Bowl 51 ended, as the Patriots won the coin toss for the first overtime Super Bowl and went right down the field before James White took that one in. That, of course, was yesterday, as the New England Patriots won the AFC title for the third year in a row. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com. And this segment is brought to you by Subway. Satisfy your steak-a-tite with Subway restaurants. $3.99 6-inch steak and cheese. Hurry in this month only. January only at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable taxes. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Yes, the New England Patriots are the most impressive organization in the National Football League. They seem to own the AFC side of the Super Bowl. And here to help us understand it a little bit more, Mike Petraglia is good enough to join us. Mike is a columnist out in Boston, covers for CLNS Media, and is all over the Patriots. Have visited with Mike here on The Score before. You can follow him on Twitter at Trags. That's at T-R-A-G-S. And Mike, thank you for taking time out for us tonight. How do you explain it, man? How do they keep doing it? How does Brady keep doing it?
There's a fire in the belly that is unlike any athlete I've covered in 26 years of covering Boston sports. I mean, you know, his focus, and I wrote this last night after the game, his focus under pressure and his ability to stay calm when there are 75,000 screaming Chiefs fans hungry for their first Super Bowl since 1969 doesn't faze him. And all you had to do was look at that overtime drive, Hub. He was 3-for-3 on third down and third down and 10. Not third down and 2 or 3 or 4. Third down and 10 three times, and he converted. His ability to perform when the chips are down in pressure situations on the road is unlike anybody I've ever seen. And that's a big reason why the Patriots, you know, after the game say they look to him, you know, in tough times to, you know, right the ship and calm everybody and calm the nerves, and they're able to execute.
You know, the 3 third and 10 is incredibly impressive. Anybody else, you're out there doubting it. I'm sitting there watching, thinking he's going to hit these. And then that leads me to Julian Edelman, who, another guy I can't explain. I was on the sidelines for Westwood for the game last week against the Chargers. And like
right.
an idiot, I picked the Chargers. I thought the Chargers were the best team in the AFC. You know, they hadn't lost on the road. I figured, yeah, this isn't your usual Patriots team. They just didn't beat them. They beat them up. And one of the reasons, Julian Edelman is just nasty. I mean, the last two games, every time Brady has needed one of those big throws, not only is Edelman making the catch, but he takes these vicious hits afterwards, and the ball never moves.
Have you ever seen, Hub, somebody find empty spaces in the zone better than Julian Edelman? That's what he did against the Chargers. That was pretty remarkable, and that's why Brady loves him, because Brady could be feeling pressure, but he knows that Brady knows that if he's under duress, he can pretty much look to Julian's way, and he's going to be in some soft spot in the coverage or have separated in man-to-man coverage, and he'll be there when Brady needs him. That's why, you know, Brady targets him so often, especially in the second halves of these big playoff games.
So, Mike, obviously Gronk is still the best tight end in the NFL, and yet all we heard all year long was, oh, he's done, he's going to retire, he can't do it anymore, he's too beat up. And then it was just a couple plays last week, his blocking was unbelievable, but then yesterday, about as complete a game as you can get from a tight end, and probably the two biggest catches in the game.
So the 25-yard pass reception was a thing of beauty from Tom Brady, but it was also incredible focus and route running from Rob Gronkowski. That's something he doesn't always get a lot of credit for, is his route running. He did certainly when he was able to separate, but he hasn't been able to separate this year, and that's where a lot of people thought, you know, maybe Gronk had lost it a little bit as a receiving target tight end. Well, yesterday he was able to shake loose some safeties at the top of the route and, you know, generate just enough space to get his arms free and make two huge catches.
You know, Mike, the other thing that impresses me about this team, we haven't even gotten to the defense yet, is, you know, the personnel is constantly changing except for the three or four key people in the middle. Well, it's more than three or four. It's half a dozen, 10, whatever it may be. And yet I look at this recent run of Super Bowls, the last four or five, and as much as Josh McDaniels and Belichick use this nondescript group of running backs, I think this may be the best group they've had. Sony Michel is the real deal. Burkhead is exactly what they brought him in to be. James White is incredible as third down backs go. And even what Cordarrelle Patterson has given him is kind of amazing. I think that they may have more weapons, just a different kind of weapons than what they've had the last couple of years.
Well, that's what Tom Brady said after the game. He said, we have no shortage of weapons in this locker room, and that's something that gives me a lot of confidence when I go into a big game, because I know for a fact that we can change the game plan to fit the scheme that the defense is throwing at us. And I think that's interesting, Hub, because yesterday they wanted to, and you knew this from the beginning of the game, from the first series, they were going to power run it and shove it right down the throats of the Chiefs, and the Chiefs couldn't do anything to stop it. Well, against the Rams, I don't think they're going to be able to do that, certainly with Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh in the middle. So you might see a big game from James White, like you did in Super Bowl 51 and 52. So I think that is what Brady's talking about when he says we have so many variants in our running game alone that these guys can not just run the ball, but they can catch the ball, especially James White and Rex Burkhead.
Well, yeah, I know that we haven't started our homework for the Super Bowl yet, though, Mike. I had to do the Rams and the Bears about 5-6 weeks ago. When you get into that, you're going to find out Rams actually aren't very good against the run. They weren't bad yesterday, but it'll be interesting to see which way they go with that. But flipping it around with the Patriots, I thought the defense, it was obviously getting away from them in the fourth quarter, but for the first three quarters, they may have played their best game of the year.
The defense hub also has found a pass rush in the last month of the year. And a lot of people credit Brian Flores, dynamic defensive play caller who may be getting the Miami Dolphins head coaching gig after Super Bowl 53 is over, for re-energizing the Patriots pass rush in the last month of the season, because you saw it yesterday with Kyle Van Noy breaking through twice in the first half and making and getting Patrick Mahomes off the spot and strip sacking him on the last play of the first half. You know, that is the kind of thing, you know, the ability to make a guy like Patrick Mahomes, an exceptional talent, uncomfortable, that is something that the Patriots weren't able to do in the first, 12 weeks of the season. They've been able to do it the last quarter of the season and in the two playoff games.
Mike, where is Dante Hightower right now? I mean, I thought he was clearly the difference in the win over Atlanta in the Super Bowl, obviously hurt last year. He's been back most of the year. He'll make plays here and there, but he doesn't seem to be kind of tilting the playing field the way he used to. Has he been 100%, or is it just that he's got better players around him now?
I think it's a little of both. I think Dante, they were very cautious with Dante the last 2 years. They knew his knees were bothering him, but he is one of Bill Belichick's favorite players because he's so smart and so instinctive. That's one word that Belichick always uses to describe Hightower. He's always in the right spot on the field. that being said, they don't want him in pass coverage. I mean, that's one thing that, you know, he can't do like he used to be able to do. So he is pretty much close to a line of the line of scrimmage type of linebacker. But he is, you know, one of those leaders in terms of play callers on defense. He wears the green dot, and he's really a leader out there.
Let me take it back to the offense for just a minute before we wrap this up, because we've obviously got to talk about the genius who runs this whole thing. But I think one of the best-kept secrets in football is the Patriots' offensive line. Everybody knows about Dante Scarnecchia, if you're a fan. Great coach, legendary coach. They let Nate Solder walk last year because the Giants want to give him silly money. I think Trent Brown has been better than Nate Solder ever was. I was amazed watching him last week from the sidelines. He's a free agent now. Malcolm Brown is a free agent over on the other side. They don't sign a lot of their free agents, but I wonder, with them understanding how important this is in the trenches, are these two guys you expect them to try and retain?
I think Trent Brown, they're going to. I would expect them to try and retain because he's in the prime of his career. And yes, they have really been impressed with Trent Brown. He's been very good. He's graded out, either A or B plus pretty much all year long in terms of the way they view pass protections and pressure. Protecting Brady from pressures. I would expect them to go hard after trying to re-sign Trent Brown. The interior line yesterday is what really impressed me, Hub, in terms of guys like Joe Tooney and David Andrews, the center, really taking care of Chris Jones. So that was a big concern coming into the game. They were able to do that, and that's one reason they were able to run the ball. Tom Brady this morning on his radio show here in Boston said that Dante Scarnecchia is the best offensive line coach of all time. I mean, he loves Dante.
All right, Mike, before I let you go, obviously there's the conductor, the ringleader, whatever, the ringmaster,
oh, yeah.
Whatever I say. I know Bill through the years, various Pro Football Weekly history and some mutual acquaintances. He's always been good to me to work with. Obviously, I don't cover him on a regular basis. I know that when you're on the beat, it can be interesting, I guess is the word I'll use. But is there any way to sum up or explain just how much better he is than everybody else at what he does?
Preparation, poise. And the ability, Hub, for him to spot players who are disciplined and poised in clutch situations. That's what amazes me about Bill Belichick is he can get the most out of guys that are just another, a jag, just another guy on the field, but he can put them in positions to succeed. And to me, that's what has made him the coach that he is, today for the Patriots.
Well, Mike, it's a remarkable record. I'm happy for you guys. I will look forward to hopefully maybe be able to find you and catch up in Atlanta next week. Congratulations on getting to cover another one. And I'm sure everybody's pretty happy in Boston, the New England area right now.
They definitely are. And I will be sure to bone up a little bit on the Rams defensive line, because I think you're right that maybe I'd read along somewhere that they weren't particularly strong against the run game, but they didn't look terrible against the Saints yesterday.
No, they got better late in the season. They did a remarkable job against the Cowboys. They held Zeke Elliott to 2.2 yards a carry. That's why they were there yesterday, but that's all just in the last couple of weeks. You go back and watch that Sunday night tape when they came to Chicago. The Bears, who had trouble with their running game all year long, torched them pretty good. But, hey, we got 2 weeks to get ready for it. God knows we're going to write about it in 17 different ways. So after what we saw yesterday, I think we could probably expect a pretty good game 2 weeks from yesterday.
I'm looking forward to kind of a rock fight in Super Bowl 53, unlike what we've had the last two Super Bowls, which have been, shootouts.
All right, Mike, thank you much for taking time out for us tonight. That is Mike Petraglia. Again, does a great job on the Patriots beat for CLNS Media. You can follow him on Twitter, @Trags. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, my buddy Pat Manley is going to stop by. There was some special teams play yesterday that was kind of interesting. Guys, they were 21 for 21 on field goals and extra points yesterday. Nobody missed them yesterday. We'll hear what Pat Manley had to say about a 57-yarder to win the game and more. That's next right here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Greg Zuerlein from 48. McQuaid will snap it. He does. Ball put down. Right-footed kick is up. It is in. Good. He got it. He got it. He got it and tied the game.
Oh, Greg the Leg did more than that. That was just to get it to overtime. That, of course, another one of my broadcast partners, Kevin Harlan. We do games together on Westwood One. That was his call on Westwood One yesterday. And now we get to welcome in another one of my broadcast partners, one of my very favorite people in the world to work with. And I have good news for you, Patrick. I sent the memo to Mitch this morning. I think we should absolutely do pre and post live from London this year. I think it should be on the score. And Chris Dickens, Mike Chen, producing for Midnight, they want to come and handle it with us. So, Mitch, if you're listening, we're expecting to go. Actually, Pat, let's start there. The international games.
Yeah. Hold on real quick, Hub. I almost texted you as soon as that news came out across my Twitter feed. I was that close to saying, all right, are you going to let Mitch know? We got to get over there somehow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. I thought it was important to do first. It was a holiday today, though. I haven't heard back from him, so we'll see what he has to say tomorrow. Actually, in all seriousness, I don't love him. I love London, but I don't love the international games. The league is obviously bound and determined to do it. I think we should point out for Bears fans, though, it is a Raiders home game, so you don't lose one here. The Raiders, obviously, with no place to play, don't care all that much, so they're going to lose one. So that was the news of the day. Let's get to the real news of the day. Mitch Trubisky is going to the Pro Bowl. And, Olin and I kid about this all the time. He's the second alternate, so let's not pretend that, he's a Pro Bowl quarterback. But on the other hand, it is a tremendous accomplishment. It means that the coaches and players voted him the fifth best quarterback in the NFC. That's how this works. And so I think it's kind of instructive for a lot of Bears fans who have their doubts that he's gaining some respect around the league.
Well, I think that's 100% right, Hub. And going into this year, you and I talked that we wanted to see him make that step. And I think he did make that step this year. And I thought he made some great strides from last year to, kind of each quarter throughout the season to the end of the year, making that drive, unfortunately, against the loss in the playoff game. But I thought he made those strides, and I think he got rewarded for it. I don't think he is one of the top three guys yet, but, he's got room for improvement. We all believe in that, and he's working his way up there. And it's always an honor to get invited, so it's a great thing for him. Also, I think he can maybe take something away going down there and playing with those great players and being in that quarterback room with the other guys, working with those receivers. Maybe he can take something away from that as well, and hopefully he can. But, it's always nice to be honored. I'm happy for him. But, again, I'm with you with you and Olin that it's not truly – he's not a Pro Bowler because he didn't get voted in, but he's going to the Pro Bowl. So it's good for him. I'm happy for him.
In a strange way, it's kind of like this whole Saints-Rams thing yesterday. I'm tired of hearing all the whining from New Orleans. It was an awful call. We'll talk about it in a minute. It was wrong. There's no question about it. It's not the reason the Saints lost the game. The Saints still had a chance to win the game, and now people want to diminish the Rams' trip to the Super Bowl. I'm not diminishing Mitch going to the Pro Bowl in any way. You just have to kind of look at it objectively and say that, these are kind of the circumstances under which he gets to make the trip.
Yeah, 100%. And it's on his resume now that, it says Pro Bowler next to him. But, it's just good for him to accomplish something and just keep moving forward. There's room for improvement. So he gets to go, but he's not a voted in guy yet. So let's hope for next year that his goal, or I'm sure it is every year, his goal is to be voted in. But if he is a voted in guy next year, I think the Bears can have the same season, if not better.
Pat, you played, I want to say, 16 seasons. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's got to kind of strike you interesting when everybody and their brother is screaming, kill the refs, kill the officials, change the rules. It all sucks. Obviously, it's not that simple. But yesterday, I enjoyed yesterday as much as any day of football that I've covered in the 40-plus years I've been doing this. It was just two great football games. I didn't think either the Saints or Rams played their best game. And I think that is why the Saints lost and why the Rams almost lost. I thought the Rams did just a little bit more to win. I did think the Patriots and Chiefs, the Chiefs only played a half, but the Patriots played 60-plus minutes. The Chiefs played a great second half. I just thought it was really entertaining football, really competitive football, great football to watch, and to have so many officiating calls interfere with it, it's got to be frustrating at the least.
Well, I'll start with the officiating, and Dick Geron put it best, Hub. When he, every year in training camp, the referees will come in and they'll spend a week with you to kind of get the rust off so they can get ready for the season. And they have a meeting with you and they'll introduce the new rules or the new rules of emphasis. And Dick Geron would always say, hey, guys, these guys standing up here in front of you in the stripes, they are the best in the world, just at like what you do. You make mistakes, they make mistakes. And unfortunately, that was a bad, bad mistake on the whole crew. You know, it did hurt the game, but they are the best in the world at what they do. So you got to give them that, but they missed it. And, Hub, that was one of the most entertaining days of football, whether you put all the college games or anything together, that I've had in a while. And I think that's why, you know, we sit down and watch it, why the NFL is doing so well with people tuning in. You know, now that I'm retired and I'm a Bears expert with you, I really get into the Bears games and, you know, I break those down. But all the other games, I just sit back and I want to be entertained, and I definitely was entertained. And then to go on about that call making the difference in the game, I got to say the first two or three series on the offense that the Saints has, that's what lost the game. You know, they only got 6 points out of that, and the Rams stopped them. It could have been a completely different game. The makeup could have gone completely different. The Rams could have had to change their offensive game plan. And to me, that's when they lost the game. They could have walked away with it if they go up 21-0, and that would have changed the storyline.
I'll tell you the three plays they lost the game on. 3-0, they get an interception in the red zone, they go 3-and-out and kick a field goal. Right there, I mean, I'm not trying to say I'm smart or anything, but I tweeted it at that time. I said, remember that play, remember that moment, and I really think that's when the game switched. They never were able to get away from the Rams at that point. You knew the Rams were going to score at some point. And then, Pat, I'll come back to, you know, they should not have been throwing the football in that situation to begin with. If Sean Payton doesn't throw that stupid 3-yard, whatever that was, it wasn't even a bubble screen at Michael Thomas and stop the clock, you call three running plays, you kick the field goal, and you kick off with about 11 seconds left and the game is over. You know, and so, A, they should have run on first down. B, after that, even at a minute 40, stop them. Don't let them tie the game. Okay, give the Rams credit. But after that, you got the ball in overtime. You threw the pick at your own end. You can't blame the officials for that.
No, I don't think you can overall. You just want them to be better. You don't want that to be the discussion today, and unfortunately it is. But it was still a good game, and like you brought it up and I brought it up, there were so many other plays that could have dictated the outcome of the game, and it's unfortunate that did happen. It gives a little, you know, bad taste in your mouth for just the referees having, you know, they struggle all the time. It's a tough game. The guys are so fast and big and strong that, you know, it's hard to get every call right. But that was one they definitely missed. And I want to go back to when they went up 6-0. And if you're on the sideline, the other team's sideline, and you hold them to that second field goal, you feel like a sense that, all right, that's no problem. It's just it's a one-score game. We can get this done. And I guarantee you that was what was going on in the Rams sideline, that they're like, all right, we're going to be okay. We got a lot more to go in this game. We believe in ourselves. We're here for a reason. And that second field goal, when they stopped him for that had to be a big momentum shift on that Rams sideline.
Well, let me tell you another reason, then we'll get to the other game, that I'm so much more impressed by the Rams and the Saints right now. If I'd have told you 10 minutes before kickoff, Todd Gurley was going to get 4 carries for 10 yards, be targeted with 3 passes and catch 1 for 3 yards, and he wasn't injured, and he was going to spend the fourth quarter in overtime on the sidelines, what would you have said the Rams' chances to win that game were?
Oh, game over. 100% it's over, especially in that dome. 100% it's over. You know, they came together. They seem like they have, you know, we watched them play the Bears and lose to the Bears here, and the Bears dominated on both sides of the ball, and you felt good for the Bears going forward, and it just didn't work out. I was hoping, gosh, they were going to play them out there in L.A., but I know some people in the Rams organization are happy as well. But, you know, they've really stepped up their play, and especially on the D-line, Hub. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think Sue has really stepped up his game, especially the last 2 weeks.
Oh, no. I was going to say, you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, he was a no-show in Chicago.
Yeah.
And Olin and I were talking about that. Olin pointed it out. I think a lot of it was how Wade Phillips used him in that game. But the last 2 games against Dallas and then yesterday, he has been just a monster out there. And actually, you haven't heard Aaron Donald's name all that. Now, part of that's because Donald's getting double and triple teamed.
Yeah.
But Sue has absolutely stepped up. They were one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. They took away Zeke Elliott last week, and then they did enough to control Kamara and Ingram yesterday. So, you know, I just very impressed by the Rams. They deserve to be going to the Super Bowl. The other game, though, to me, was even more. One of the things I wrote on Friday was that if they could find a way with Aqib Talib back to take away or limit Michael Thomas, And if the Patriots could find a way to take away or limit Tyreek Hill, that they were going to win these games, and that's exactly what both teams did. That was their defensive game plan. The way the Patriots played defense for three quarters, I mean, it was getting away from them in the fourth quarter, but it was the defense that got them there. And even though it was, what, a 69, 68-point game, whatever it was, I hadn't seen the Patriots defense play that well in the last year or two.
Now, when I heard you talking a little bit to the previous guest, talking about the pass rush, that they, you know, that's improved. You know, we were breaking down the Bears-Patriots game. There was one player, Flowers, that we were really worried about. Everybody else, you just kind of was an afterthought, and they really picked it up there. And the other part of the game, or the other part of the team for the Patriots, is their O-line. These last 2 weeks, man, they are, you know, it's funny. Gronkowski gets all the love, and he's blocking great out there, but there's five other guys that are holding it down and pushing the guys off the ball and putting them in the end zone and knocking them back 5 yards, and they need more love than they're getting, because they're killing them up front, and I think that's been the biggest difference. They just committed to the run. They've been able to run it, and then to go back to that defense, they're getting after the passer a little bit.
You know, Pat, it's funny. I talked about that on the air a lot last week. I was on the sidelines a week ago yesterday in Foxborough for the Charger game, and I actually picked the Chargers because I'm a genius. So, you know, I thought the Chargers were the best team in the AFC.
Sure.
But I hadn't gotten a good look up close at that offensive line. Trent Brown is the biggest man I've ever seen on a football field. I mean, they list him at 6'8", 380, and I think he may be bigger than that. And he is playing so well right now. He owned Joey Bosa. And then yesterday, the Chiefs were number one in the NFL in quarterback sacks. They never really got close yesterday.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that, because when you see guys listed at their weight and their size, and I was like, is he more than he's, you know, listed, or is he less? It's interesting to see that he's bigger, because that is a big, big man. And that Chargers game, it was fun to watch them, because they were dominating so much. I don't know if you got to see – I love it when O-linemen celebrate pancake blocks or double teams back to, you know, 5 or 6 yards, and he's come back to the huddle, you know, doing some movements. And he's made a huge difference, and he is huge. And he's a free agent, did I hear that?
He is, yeah. He's unrestricted. They just traded for him during the offseason last year with the Niners, and Petraglia was saying he thinks they'll re-sign him. But inside with Andrews and Thuney and Shaq Mason, they're terribly underrated everywhere. The most interesting thing about Brown is he is so big that it's hard for him to get in a three-point stance. And he only is in the three-point stance maybe 20% of the time, but I was watching it last week, but he switches it up. So it's not only in pass pro, not only in run block, but he only gets that hand down maybe 20% of the time. But he is just playing dominant football right now.
Yeah, okay, you'll know better. Why did the 49ers get rid of him?
They had him at right tackle. They never even played him at left tackle. They had him playing right tackle. They just missed the evaluation on that, and that's on John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, because Patriots knew what they wanted. I think they gave him, I want to say it was a 4 or a 3. They gave up a decent pick for him, and he was going to be a free agent, but they just didn't know what they had. So real quick before I let you go, Pat, I'm sure this struck you. I know that you're aware of these numbers. 21 of 21 yesterday on extra points and field goals. Zuerlein, 48 to OT, 57 to win. Butker, 48 to get to overtime. I mean, it was an impressive day of special teams. Not a lot in the return games, but the kicking games, the punting games. I thought it was a really good day yesterday and really instructive for Bears fans as to why it's important for them to focus on that this offseason.
No doubt about it. You can just go back to the 06 season when Robbie hit the game winner against Seattle. I mean, that was a big kick, and he's a young kid doing it, and he nailed it, and we moved on. It does. It comes down to these pressure pack situations, you know, all across the board, because every play, you know, is weighed heavier because it's the playoffs. But the kickers, long snappers, punters, they've got to execute better, and they showed it yesterday, and that was impressive, man. Zuerlein, to hit that 57-yarder, hit the back of the net. I mean, that thing had to be good from 70, and he split it right down the middle. That's impressive. All those guys had a big game. Even the guys out in Kansas City. I mean, a tough weather day. Gostkowski had some big kicks. They all did, and it's good to see. And, yeah, hopefully the Bears can either find the right person or Cody can come in and be the most mentally strong person I've ever met in my entire life and overcome what he's been going through.
I know you've talked about this on the air. I promise I'll let you go after this one, but you and I haven't had a chance to talk about it. Regardless of how mentally strong he is, I wouldn't bring him back because of the pressure I think it puts on everybody else on the team every time he goes out there to kick, no matter how good a start he gets off to next year. That's just kind of my thought. Am I not looking at this right?
I'm with you 100%. And I guess I'm glad I'm not in his shoes, but if I was in his shoes, I would just want to move along. Mm-hmm. You know, be confident in your ability, but just this is a tough place to play. You know, it's a lot of pressure. It's one of the toughest, you know, sports cities in the country to play in, and you know, as I've said many, many times before, Bears fans, they love you. And excuse me, I'll do the other way around. They'll get on you hard when you're losing, but when you're winning, they love you twice as much. But it's pretty hard when you miss a kick like that. And, you know, it might just be better for him personally, you know, mentally and everything, just to kind of move on. I do think it would be better for the Bears as well.
All right, Patrick, it's good to catch up with you. I hope you guys had a great trip, by the way. And I suspect you were in a better place than we were when Cody double-doinked it. So all's well that ends well for vacation.
Yeah, anyway. I was, but that was tough, man. That was tough.
I know, but hopefully this will be a better year. Let's start working on Mitch on our London trip. I think we all have to go to Miami for the Super Bowl as well. We've got the formula now. We've been comparing these Bears to last year's Rams right along. So hopefully that comparison can continue through 2019.
Sounds good. Good chatting with you, Hub. And I'll compose that email for Mitch right now.
Take care, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That is our very own Patrick Manley, a regular here on The Score, my broadcast partner on the Bears pregame show here. We are going to take another break, and we got the hits that keep on coming. We've got Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. We'll check in with Eric next right here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.